Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning, everyone. Brian Lehrer with you on WNYC, and we begin today with a WNYC News investigative report. We've heard the numbers before when it comes to stop and frisk. Police arrest 140 people for low-level marijuana offenses, possessing small amounts or smoking marijuana or displaying it in public. On any average day, 140 arrests on any average day in the five boroughs. Last year, there were only over 50,000 such arrests, and 86% of those arrested were Black or Latino. And as we know, national studies show that those are not the groups even most likely to use marijuana. But numbers alone don't tell the story, especially when there are questions about why stop and frisk yields such high numbers of marijuana arrests and why many of those searches and arrests are in some of the city's poorest neighborhoods. Remember, the goal here is to get guns off the street. That's the point of the stop and frisk program. Joining me now is WNYC reporter Elsa Chang to talk about her WNYC investigation into whether the high rate of marijuana arrests is connected to the city's stop and frisk policy and to possible illegal searches, in some cases, by the police. Hey, Elsa.
Hi there.
First, by way of background, what is the law exactly when it comes to marijuana possession?
In New York, possessing small amounts of marijuana only becomes a crime, it becomes a misdemeanor, if you're actually smoking it or displaying it in public view. If it's in your pocket, it's not a crime. It's something called a violation. All you're supposed to get is a ticket, like a traffic ticket, and you pay a fine of about $100, including some court mandatory surcharges.
And what is the law when it comes to searches and the procedure in stop and frisk? Because that's what you're really looking at in your
right.
report is when police searches are illegal.
Right. The law is actually very specific. For a police officer to stop you on the street, he has to have reasonable suspicion you're committing a crime. For him to actually pat down the outside of your clothing, that is frisk you, he needs to have reasonable suspicion that you're carrying a weapon. But he can only search you. That is, he can only go inside a pocket if he thinks he feels a weapon in that pocket during the pat down. And then he can reach in, check to see if that hard object that feels like a weapon is a weapon. But if it's not a weapon, he puts it back in your pocket. He doesn't then have license to go into every pocket, every sock, your underwear, taking off your shoes.
So let's play a clip from your piece. The two men are Leo Henning and Hassan Covington. And what are we going to hear here? Are these allegations of how they were searched in ways that may have been illegal?
Yeah, both of them and their lawyers said they were illegally searched. What you're going to hear is two men getting stopped on the street by police. A pat down begins. Remember, they say there was still no reasonable suspicion to even have stopped them on the street. They were just walking home doing nothing suspicious, nothing criminal-like. And then once the pat down started, it immediately turns into a search, according to them. Not only are the police patting down the outside of their clothes, they're going into pockets, into shoes, into their underwear.
They patted me down, and they checked the outside of my sleeves or my coats.
You know, they touched my shoulders, chest, back, midsection, legs, feet. Then they're in the pockets.
Then he went into my front right pocket. Then he went to my front left pocket. Then he went to my right back pocket. Then he went to my left back pocket. And then he switched over to my right sock. He stuck his hands in. His fingers was going under my foot. Inside my sock. That's when he felt it together.
Did he ever ask if he could search you?
No.
Did you ever say, go ahead, look into my pockets?
No.
Did you ever open your pockets to show him what was in your pocket?
No. Didn't have an opportunity to.
So, talk about that clip.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, these are allegations.
Right. That's right. That's right.
By two men who were arrested.
For marijuana possession, misdemeanor marijuana possession, and specifically for displaying marijuana in public view. Now, according to them, Leo Henning, he said his marijuana was inside his sock underneath his foot. Now, even if you're doing a pat down, even if you felt something, you know, like in around the foot area, it's difficult to believe that if, you know, with his shoe still on, the police felt a hard weapon-like object putting their hands over the bottom of their shoe, if you believe what Leo Henning says. Hassan Covington says he was carrying two bags of marijuana inside his jacket pocket. Now, neither of these men were carrying weapons at the time that they were stopped. Were they carrying any hard objects that felt like weapons? Well, they were both carrying cell phones. Leo Henning was also carrying a bottle of cologne, but those items were in one pocket. And he said the police moved from that pocket with the hard items to the other pocket. I mean, you heard it on the tape, to his jean pockets back in front, down to his socks and shoes.
Now, of course, everybody or almost everybody who's arrested for something is going to say, I'm not guilty. I didn't do it. The police abused me, whatever it's going to be. So how credible do you think these guys are? And what's the implication for the larger rate of possible illegal searches by the police when we know there are so many thousands of stop and frisk pat downs?
Right. I think, you know, individually, it's difficult to just weigh a person's story just on their own merits, did it or did not happen. It becomes a he said, she said game. But collectively, if you talk to public defenders in each of the five boroughs, they will tell you that stories like this about alleged illegal searches, about stop and frisks that were occurring with no reasonable suspicion at all of criminal activity on the street, they occur in such enormous numbers, you know, at least the stories that they hear, that collectively that chorus of voices reflects a reality. I'm sort of stealing a phrase from Robin Steinberg, who's the executive director of the Bronx Defenders, a public defense organization in the South Bronx. And it's just that once you hear so many stories over and over again from different people who don't know each other, from different neighborhoods, who kind of describe the same exact thing happening to them, it does begin to make you wonder whether these illegal searches are happening. But we don't have raw numbers on how many illegal searches occur every year in New York City.
WNYC's Elsa Chang raising this question in her investigative report of how many illegal searches NYPD officers are conducting during stop and frisks and how many of those result in marijuana arrests, low-level marijuana arrests that would not take place otherwise, with obviously criminal justice implications for the lives of those arrested who might not otherwise come in contact with the criminal justice system. And listeners, we're going to open up the phones for your calls on any side of this. Have you been stopped and frisked by police in New York City? Did they search you in this way, according to you? Were you aware that certain kinds of searches are legal, certain kinds are illegal? Any lawyers, public defenders, like Elsa was just referring to, any NYPD officers listening want to call in and talk about the procedure you use, or anyone involved in the training for the stop and frisk program considered by the NYPD clearly as a main method of keeping the city safe by taking guns off the street? What about the whole marijuana connection here? And do you go into people's pockets? Do you train officers to go into people's pockets other than perhaps those where you actually feel something hard that might be a gun? 212 for any of you, 433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Maybe there's a judge listening, Elsa, who wants to talk about how he or she judges whether a search was illegal, especially if it's a he said, she said.
Right. That would be really interesting. I mean, that's the second part of my story, which is going to air tomorrow, goes into that. Why so few illegal searches get challenged in court. And ultimately, it does come down to your word as a defendant against the police's, because usually there's no videotape of what happened during these stop and frisks. Prosecutors have told me that they, you know, at the very outset of a case, what they decide to charge a person with depends largely, at least at first, on what police officers reveal in their paperwork. So if a police officer fails to mention in his or her paperwork that the marijuana actually wasn't in public view, I actually found it in the person's pants pocket, prosecutors say it's almost impossible for them to know that without a further investigation. But so many defendants plead guilty right at the outset of a case, right at that first court appearance, that there's no time for prosecutors to fully investigate whether there was an illegal search, whether the marijuana truly was in public view.
So here's a lawyer calling in who says he has a client in this situation. Wade in Manhattan. Counselor, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thanks for calling. What's up?
Okay, let me just qualify. I'm a personal injury attorney, but my client has a story that's very similar to those gentlemen that were describing the story, only the police didn't find anything on my client. But after they had frisked him, he was standing there, and he went down to adjust his cuff because they had, like, messed up his cuff in his sock. And as he went down, the cop thought he was going for a gun and put him through a plate glass window. And so they arrested him for impersonating a police officer because he had a security badge, like, because that was his job, his security officer, mm-hmm. to a security badge on him, but then they dropped the whole thing. But now he's left with a huge scar. And he just described to me that this happens all the time to him and his friends, that they're just walking on the street, they get stopped, they get frisked, not much they can do about it.
Can I ask what race your client is, or ethnicity, and what neighborhood he lives in?
Yeah, he's black, and it was in Brooklyn.
Wade, thank you very much. Well, there you go. Again, a telling by a lawyer of not just an incident, but a pattern that he's hearing.
Right, exactly. Now, illegal searches, you know, as I was just saying, it's very difficult to litigate those in court. They just, for some reason, because of, you know, what I was saying, a lot of these clients plead guilty right at the outset, illegal searches don't get litigated. I mean, it means coming back to court 8 to 10 more times for the next year and a half for these defendants. And it's just a true disruption to their lives. So a lot of them just want to get on with their lives. So they'll plead either to the misdemeanor, or sometimes prosecutors will offer a lesser charge, a violation, this non-criminal charge that we talked about at the beginning.
So, listeners, our very busy phones have already packed our 10 lines, you could imagine. And our website is also open on this for your stories or questions or comments. We should point out, and that's WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And also, there's a map on the WNYC website showing which police precincts have the highest number of marijuana arrests and which have the highest stop and frisk rates in the city. It shows that the precincts covering neighborhoods which are predominantly black or Latino, not surprisingly, also have higher numbers of marijuana arrests. That's where the stops and frisks tend to take place. That's where the suspicion of illegal guns tends to be most concentrated. So go check out that map at WNYC.org. And if you want to post your comment or question about this on the Brian Lehrer Show page. Let's take another caller. Aoife in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hello, Aoife.
Yes, good morning. I'd like to ask a question. If a study has been done to see if there's been any increase to city revenues as a result of the stop and frisk arrests.
Not that I know of, but a study has been done by the Drug Policy Alliance to calculate how much the city is spending to keep arresting people for misdemeanor marijuana possession. And last year, it was found that the city spent over $75 million to keep arresting people for misdemeanor marijuana possession. And an interesting thing is last year also, the vast majority of people convicted after a misdemeanor marijuana arrest ended up walking away with lesser charges, non-criminal charges, these violations. So even though the city is spending tens of millions of dollars nailing people for misdemeanor marijuana arrests, the people getting convicted, most of them are walking away with non-criminal charges.
Huh. Aoife, thank you. But when you get a violation, because that's sort of like a parking ticket.
Right.
Do you pay a fine?
You do. It's about $100, and there's usually some mandatory court surcharges involved.
So there's some revenue element there.
There is.
But maybe that's not the motivation. I mean, the stop and frisk policy program costs the city large sums of money. This is different than, say, you know, some people now are saying, oh, this crackdown on bicyclists getting a lot of moving violation tickets, that's for revenue to pay for all those bike lanes.
Right. Well, I asked current cops who wouldn't talk to me on the record, what is the motivation? Why do we see so many marijuana arrests? And a few of them told me, you know, in the end, it's a lot of it is because supervisors like to see arrests. Arrests are a sign of productivity. There is a pressure on the street cop to get results. That's what they say. And therefore, some, you know, marijuana arrests, they're easy, they're clean, they take a few hours. It's these are arrests that you know, get on the record and are
desirable from an officer's standpoint. Mm-hmm. Roger in Levittown, retired from the NYPD. Thank you so much for calling in.
First of all, the reporter has completely misstated the law. The officer needs reasonable suspicion to believe that any felony has taken place or any misdemeanor in the penal law. So the motivation does not have to be that they believe that there's a weapon. That's completely wrong.
Well, if I could just, sorry, to pat you down, you need reasonable suspicion that you're carrying a weapon. To stop you on the street, you need reasonable suspicion that that the person's committed a criminal activity or is about to commit a crime. There's a difference between stopping someone and then patting them down. Two different legal standards.
That's absolutely right. But, you know, you should mention that. Also, you might want to mention the tremendous reduction of homicides involving Black and Latino community as a result of this policy. You might want to mention that.
Yes.
You know,
I think that's a very, you know, fair point. In fact, that's one of the police's arguments. That's why they say that these marijuana arrests are defensible. They say being tough on low-level offenses like marijuana brings down violent crime. One of the precincts of one of the men that I highlighted in my piece, the 46th precinct in the Bronx, they've seen murder drop 85% in the last 20 years, and that precinct has one of the highest marijuana arrest rates in the city. However, law enforcement experts say it's almost impossible to single out marijuana arrests or low-level offense arrests as the cause for the drop in violent crime in New York City.
So, Roger, do you think that I mischaracterized the stop and frisk program when I said the goal is to get guns off the street and these marijuana busts happen sort of inadvertently? Would you say it's actually broader than that, that they're going after guns and marijuana and maybe other things?
Oh, I just want to say that when you misstate the law, you start off away on the wrong foot, and that's important.
I understand. But in terms of what the policy and the program is really about, as you understand it, do you think it would be more accurate to say they're trying to make the neighborhood safer by going after guns, which is obviously a big thing, and the lower level crimes like marijuana possession with the stop and frisk policy?
Well, certainly the purpose cannot be to find small amounts of marijuana. However, it's well-known theory. I'm sure you've heard it millions of times, the broken window theory. Of addressing smaller violations has a huge impact on the overall crime rate. That's kind of like dogma right now in law enforcement.
Right. And so do you think the cops out there are do you think they should be trained to make a very – to kind of try to avoid the marijuana, you know, to go after the weapons but not get despite the broken windows theory, not get a lot of people arrested if they're just carrying marijuana?
You might want to mention that it goes below marijuana in that drink a beer on the street in New York City right now, you're going to get a summons in any neighborhood. So, I mean, does drinking beer on the street in groups lead to crimes? Yes, it does sometimes.
Well, that's public drunkenness. That's not carrying something in your pocket.
No, it's not public drunkenness. Even drinking a beer, I saw a yuppie getting stopped the other day in Williamsburg, so it's not. It's in every neighborhood.
Right, it's just the display of it.
You know, the bottom line, yes, it is a minor crime. Does it lead to other things? Yes, it does. That's the theory anyhow. That's the broken windows theory, and it seems to have been working pretty well.
Roger, thank you for your call. I really appreciate it. And there's been a 70% increase in marijuana arrests in the last 5 years. LCUS Police Commissioner Ray Kelly about this, and here's part of his response.
Marijuana is against the law, or smoking marijuana. Officers encounter those situations in the street, they take action. If anyone thinks that's inappropriate, they should petition the state legislature to change the law.
So that doesn't make it sound at all like they're trying to distinguish between the guns and the pot. It makes it sound like they're going after whatever's illegal, and he's not apologetic about this whatsoever.
Right. The law is the law. It's not my problem what the law is. It's my problem to enforce the law. However, let's look at what is the law, and going back to the recent caller's comment. If people are carrying around small amounts of marijuana, yes, that is illegal. But if it's in your pocket, it is a violation. Okay, it's not a misdemeanor. And the allegation by these defense lawyers and these defendants I've met is these people with marijuana in their pocket, what is non-criminal behavior, turns into criminal behavior because police are allegedly pulling this marijuana out of the pocket and bringing that marijuana into public view. That converts the non-criminal behavior into criminal behavior, a misdemeanor. And that's when it's arrestable.
And that's the allegation, is the officers pulling the marijuana out of the pocket and bringing it into public view and then charging
for a misdemeanor
the arrestee with having it in public view.
Exactly.
Did Kelly respond to that explicitly?
We didn't get to that in the press conference. He took the next question.
One more call. Stephen in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC. Hello, Stephen.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
Good. I just wanted to comment quickly. I was in the 88th precinct in Brooklyn, and I got arrested for biking on the sidewalk. This isn't about biking. And I spent a night in jail with a lot of these minority kids, and there was an awful lot of talk about police officers taking money and iPods off the kids.
Oh, and that the kid, that the cops the were kid, stealing from the kids, allegedly?
Yeah, the kid gets arrested. He's slinging weed all day. He's got $1,000 in his pocket. He goes to the precinct. They write down there's $100 in his pocket. He gets out of jail. He goes back to the precinct. He gets his $100, $900, poof, into the vortex.
And so such are the allegations. How did you wind up behind bars for riding a bicycle on the street, which would be a ticket normally?
I had a previous, so there was a warrant for my arrest.
Well, that, I guess that'll do it. Stephen, thank you very much. So what do you do next, Elsa? Is there a follow-up to this story?
Well, let's see if the police department responds. You know, Paul Brown, I asked him, you know, how many searches result from these stop and frisks? And he did give me a number. He says only 9% of all stop and frisks result in searches. But I you know, asked other law enforcement experts and current and retired police officers and prosecutors, does this number seem feasible? And they felt that it undercounted. Again, these are all people's, you know, feelings, speculations. But they say a lot of these are all sort of reliant on self-reporting by police. Police are supposed to report if they've searched someone during a stop and frisk, but that doesn't always happen. And on top of that, a lot of stop and frisks aren't recorded. A lot of times, according to current officers I've talked to, marijuana arrests are written up as arrests, not as a stop and frisk and an arrest. So it's difficult to truly calculate, according to them at this point, how many searches happen during these stop and frisks.
And again, listeners, you can hear WNYC's Elsa Chang's full report on this on our website, WNYC.org. You can keep the conversation going on our page, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, and we have that map showing which police precincts have the highest number of marijuana arrests and which have the highest stop and frisk rates in the city, all at WNYC.org. Elsa Chang, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, new, more serious charges for the roommate of Tyler Clementi at Rutgers, charges against this Rutgers student for disseminating a gay sex video of his roommate. This person, the roommate and a friend, could now go to prison for this. And Apple and Google, knowing precisely where you are through your smartphone or iPad, should you care? Stay with us.